This is Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark. If you met Robert Alexander, you know, at a dinner party, and you're sitting there and you're talking about, you know, well, so what do you do? He would have the most incredible answer. So cool, you might not even believe him.
I work with data from the sun and turn it into music.
That's right. Alexander is a sonification specialist at the University of Michigan. He's also worked closely with scientists at NASA.
The sun, I mean, to think about what I'm sonifying, the source of all life on Earth, it's completely humbling. And for me, it's completely awe-inspiring to set up, you know, a framework such that the sun can write music. You know, when I'm writing this music, I like to try to step back and take out my own compositional tendencies and biases, and as much as possible, just to allow the sun to express itself. And that very idea of giving a voice to the sun, that's awesome. You know, that puts a smile on my face.
Now, we'll get into the music in a minute, but if you were to listen to raw data from the sun, actually listen to the sun, this is what it would sound like. That is the sound of the sun's rotation. Robert, tell me a little bit more about what we're hearing there. We say that's the sun's rotation. Say what?
That's the sun's rotation as observed by a satellite. So we have all these satellites out there in space, and they're at the gravitational saddle point between the Earth and the sun, and they're just sitting in what we call the solar wind, which is a stream of particles that's just constantly blowing outward from the sun. And those measurements are of the speed of the solar wind. And so we've taken those measurements over 40 years. And what we're hearing with that hum, that's going, there's a rise and fall in intensity. And so that's actually the sun, it becomes more and less active over time. And so it's a sort of heartbeat, I like to call it. And that's the solar cycle is, you know, this rise and fall in activity.
The heartbeat of the sun.
Yeah.
So let's contrast that sound of the sun's rotation with this next piece of audio. You took a little more creative freedom with this one. This is what you call a solar symphony. Love that so much. Explain what we're listening to right there.
So rather than listening to 40 years worth of data, we're listening to just one. And we're hearing the density of the particles coming off the sun. We're hearing how quickly they're flying. And that's all being described by these instruments. It's being described by the melodic lines that they're playing. So when you hear the violins going up, then that's letting you know that the helium to oxygen ratio is going up. So, you know, there's all of this kind of science going on beneath the scenes. And if a scientist understands the relationship between the sound and the data, then, you know, hearing that, you know, opening few bars, they would say like, oh, well, the helium to oxygen ratio went down.
Yeah. And what's making that ratio change? Is it just the energy from the sun?
Yeah, all these data parameters the satellite observes are constantly changing because the sun, it's so turbulent and chaotic. You know, it's constantly, you know, spitting out coronal mass ejections and solar flares. And it's really important to be able to forecast things like this, to know when we have to, you know, bring in the shields on the satellites to protect the instruments.
Right, right. Okay, I want to listen to one more example. And what we're about to hear here is actually data that you took to create an audio representation of what it would be like to travel to the sun. Okay, so what are we hearing here?
We're still hearing things like the solar wind velocity, but now that's being described by, there's that sort of like whooshing wind sound.
Oh, yeah.
And so I generated a white noise and then filtered it to create a whoosh, whoosh, sort of rising and falling whoosh. And when you listen to that, you know, sweeping upwards and downwards, it lets you know the solar wind is increasing and decreasing in speed. And then there's all types of different layers on top of that. There's clusters of voices. You have low-tone clusters and middle-tone clusters, then very high-tone clusters. That's all this gorgeous alto voice, Amanda Alexander. And that tells us something about the temperature of the solar wind. So as the solar wind gets hotter, So all the, you know, charged particles coming off the sun, as they're more energized, then you get more of these high clusters of voices, and then you get lower voices when the temperature goes down. And so it's almost as though you have a three-armed conductor, and when the charge states go up, then he's saying the higher voices now should sing, you know, more prominently, and then, you know, he quiets them down when the temperature goes down.
Well, and Robert, you've done this really amazing thing, right, where you've taken science and technology, and you've added music to it, so you actually get this sort of emotional response to the universe.
Absolutely, and that the journey out to the sun was actually a response from the research group I was working with at the University of Michigan, the Solar Heliospheric Research Group, because one of the first iterations that I created, it was just, you know, it sounded like a sine wave that was kind of warbling up and down. It wasn't right. All that exciting. And, you know, the very first reaction that I had when I was approached by the group was, I want to maintain scientific accuracy. And so the first version that I created, you know, was very scientifically accurate, yeah. But it wasn't very enjoyable to listen to. So then they gave me a certain element of creative freedom. They said, we know that you're a composer. Just have at this data, you know, create more of an emotional journey.
So this is all really incredibly amazing work. But I think there's probably some people who are going, okay, this is lovely, great. But, you know, where's the science in all of this? What's actually going to be done with this?
You know, that's a really important question. And that's a question that I bring to the data every time that I sit down to create an auditory translation of solar data. And in working with a research scientist, we have actually been able to make a number of new scientific discoveries. In that clip that we played early on where we're listening to the rotation
right.
of the sun, one of the really cool things is that when you listen closely, you can hear the harmonic series embedded inside
right,
of that clip.
Right.
So you can hear the low hum, the then you also get an octave above that. And you end up getting the entire harmonic series, you know, up to the 10th harmonic. And so in listening to different data parameters, we've actually found that the harmonic presence was stronger with carbon than it was with oxygen. So just by listening, we picked out the difference in the harmonic presence. That then led a research scientist to do a little more digging. And that now gives us a better indicator of where the solar wind is coming from. So we used to use oxygen to tell us where the solar wind is coming from on the surface of the sun. But now that we've done this auditory investigation, we now use a completely different parameter. We now use carbon. And that originated from just sitting down and listening to the data. And we also recently published a paper with a Journal of Geophysical Research, Space Physics, and we sat down with the research scientist and we had him listen and look at the data at the same time and tell us about what he's able to see and what he's able to hear. And we had him do this over a long extended period of time. And he got really good to the point where we wouldn't even need to show him a visual representation. He could tell us exactly what was taking place just by listening. And he was picking out all sorts of subtle wave-particle interactions. And a lot of these interactions had actually been completely overlooked. And there's a satellite out there, Ulysses, and it's been gathering data, you know, for over a decade. And just by listening to that data, he was able to identify a noise that had not been discovered by research teams that had been working with this data for quite a long time. So we published that in this paper for the first time, saying, hey, you know, we sat down with the data, we listened to it, and we were able to pick out something that, you know, people who have been digging through this data for a while haven't picked up on. And part of that, you know, has to do with the high sensitivity of the ear. You need to sit down and listen because there's so much subtle nuance in the sound. And that's what the scientists are picking out when they listen to the data.
So it's using a different sense. I mean, we use our eyes. Oftentimes we'll use, you know, our nasal passages to figure something out. Taste. But this is really using our ears and everything that goes along with using them for science.
Yeah, I love that notion of, you know, bringing scientists to their senses. And that idea of, so you don't wake up in the morning and say, you know, am I going to use my eyes today or am I going to use my ears? You're using all of your senses all the time. You know, if you're standing and waiting for the subway, you know, you're hearing the subway train approaching, you're seeing it approaching, and, you know, you're feeling the wind, and all of your senses combine to create this rich sensory experience. And that's what, you know, we believe science can be. And that's the way that we believe science should be conducted, with as many tools as we have at our disposal. And sometimes looking at data, it's great. It tells you what you need to know. And we're finding other times it's better to listen.
Robert Alexander is a sonification specialist at the University of Michigan. We've been listening to some sounds that he's composed. Sounds from the sun. Such cool work you're doing. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.